Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 160 with Cale Atkinson, author-illustrator of To the Sea, published by Disney Hyperion. Cale and I became fast friends on Twitter via the Kidlit Art hashtag, and when I finally got my copy of his debut picture book, I was moved. It's a touching story about a boy and a whale, and seeing one another for who they are and what they need. It's a quiet book, and one I still hear speaking to me. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device by subscribing through your preferred podcast host, like Stitcher or iTunes, or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on the Stitcher app or iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to these podcast hosting tools recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 160 of the podcast with Cale Atkinson. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Cale Atkinson. I'm so excited that you're here and that we get to celebrate To the Sea.
Thanks for having me. I am so happy to be here.
Cale, I love your book. I've said it off recording. I'm saying it on recording. I'm saying it on record. For the record, I love To the Sea.
It's legit now.
It's legit now. Add that to your stamps of approval that I know you're collecting in your little date book now. I don't know how else to word this other than the way that we first connected is the way that I get to meet a lot of really cool people on this podcast. And I think also the reason why this podcast hopefully connects with the people listening to it, which is to say that, I met you on Twitter and I started really noticing your art and really connecting with your art and really loving and, not being able to stop thinking about the art that you're creating. And so to have the opportunity to get to talk to you, and more importantly, to get to celebrate your debut into children's literature was such a very special thing for me. So really, in no small way, thank you for being here to talk to me tonight.
Again, thanks for having me. I have to also thank you so much for all your nice words that you have said on To the Sea. The listeners won't know that you sent me a really nice email that kind of was the nicest response I've gotten to the book thus far, and it was worded better than I could ever word anything. It makes me trying to write something, I sound like a drunk Stallone or something trying to talk. I just appreciate your support along the way here so much, and it's been great listening to your podcast. I think that's kind of how we got connected, was Twitter and me listening to your podcast and then you kind of seeing my art and then it building from there.
Well, I fully intend to not shy away from this podcast being an open love letter to the sea. And I challenge
any of the listeners who find and love this book to write a better email to you, because I know that I think we all, honestly, if I'm speaking on behalf of librarians and fans of children's literature, we all fall in love with picture books and with chapter books and with graphic novels, but I think rarely do we set aside time to tell you, the person or the people behind these books, how much they connect with us. And hopefully some of us are doing that through sharing pictures on Facebook and tweeting and things like that. But I think that it's important that you get to hear it, because I think that I think that you've worked really hard on this book, and now it's a chance for you to see the way that your work affects other people in this world.
Mm-hmm. It's been really neat so far since the book released on Tuesday. I've been getting some emails or some tweets and things, and people have been sending me pictures reading it, either in their classroom or with their kid or baby, and it's been amazing. It's been surreal, because I still can't believe my book. Seeing somebody else holding my book is still very strange, because I'm like, how did you get that? That's my book.
Actually out in the wild. Yeah, but not.
Yeah, they are out there. They are getting them. They're not coming to my house and finding them on my desk. It's amazing, yeah. And so to see that and be getting kind words about it, and yeah, it's been incredible.
Cale, what is the story of To the Sea? Can you give a book talk on it, please?
Oof. So do you want me to tell you what the plot is, or how it came to be a book?
Let's save the how it came to be for a little later. For now, just give me a pitch. I'm brand new to your book. I'm seeing it in the store. What is it all about?
Ooh. So To the Sea is about a boy named Tim, who's kind of a quiet, keeps to himself kind of boy, who just doesn't have a lot of friends, who sort of feels invisible to his surroundings. He hasn't quite made that connection with anyone like him in the school. And one day while he's leaving school, and it's kind of a rainy kind of day. I grew up in Vancouver, so I grew up with lots of rainy days. And one day after school, he's leaving, and he finds a giant big blue whale outside his school playground named Sam. And the book's about how Sam is also lost. He's lost from the ocean. He took a wrong turn because he doesn't know his rights and lefts too well yet. And he ended up there, and he doesn't know how to get back home. So Sam and Tim kind of forge a connection as both of them sort of feel lost. Tim feeling a bit more lost figuratively. He feels lost in his surroundings, and Sam is literally kind of lost. And so they almost need each other in some way. And so they form more of a true friendship and connection, and it's kind of about that story and about Tim trying to help Sam get back to the sea.
All right. That was well done. Oof. I'm gonna add in some, if you don't mind.
Oh, please, please do.
I love, Cale, that this is a book about being seen and about knowing that you, in any small or large way, are a part of someone else's life, and that makes you incredibly important to the world. I feel like this is a book about knowing that we all have a place, and that no one is insignificant. And that was a special thing for me. And I think that way because of teaching children and seeing that there are times when there are kids that don't get as much attention. I mean, I think actually, if I'm honest with you, sadly in the classroom, it's really the most well-behaved children that get the least attention because we focus on all the kids that are calling out or that are
loud and running around,
doing whatever. Yeah. But it's just in any case, there are people that get overlooked. I think this happens with adults too. But the strength that I saw in your illustrations, even alone, the looks that Sam and Tim were giving each other of seeing each other. When I emailed you, just to be frank with the people listening, I admitted that I am a person that being connected means everything to me, and probably that's why I do this podcast, to feel connected with you and other people like you. And it's why I Skype as much as I do in my library program. And it's why I try to do everything I can to share my words and my love, if you will, with other people, because I want them to know that they matter to me, and that I'd like to know in some small way that I matter to them. And so for me, To the Sea felt like that. It felt like just a message that we all matter, and that, you know, sometimes we matter to someone that nobody even notices. No, I mean, Sam is this giant blue whale, and Tim seems to be the only one that notices him, but it means everything to Tim to be noticed. And that, I don't know, that's just something that resonates so deeply beyond words for me.
Mm-hmm. See, again, you can put things in so much better words than me. Oh my gosh. I want
just
that.
Just because I read your picture book and I'm like, oh my word, I'm in therapy with Cale Atkinson.
I need to
send him my copay.
I'm going to type all this and it's going to be the new summary for the book, I think. Like, oh man.
Well,
it's so nice here.
Well, we can definitely switch to talking about the process of leading up to it. But maybe one of the things I want to call attention to first that I was so striking to me and something I really admired was your illustrations, in that really we've got sort of a dual tone illustration going on here. It's all shades of blue and of yellow or orange, and it just makes a very striking book. And I also love, just to call it out right away, that your rain, and it rains all the time in this book, is just straight lines. Just these straight, like, textured lines down. And I just loved the feeling of, I guess I can't, I'm not going to be able to avoid this emotional thing, Cale. I'm going to just tell you. It just felt like, you know, it's that feeling of aloneness is a downpour. It's never just a sprinkle. It feels heavy on you. You feel it on your head and on your shoulders all the time. You're constantly reminded you are alone, even though you're not. Even though you're looking straight ahead and there's someone that's smiling at you, it still feels like you are alone. And that, to me, that imagery, that symbolism was significant, and something that I guess I smiled a lot reading this book, just feeling like, oh my word, this guy Cale, this author written on the book, he understands me. And then that made me think, oh, all of my children are going to read this book and know that somebody else gets them too. And that's a big deal, Cale.
Mm-hmm. That's, thanks. It's really nice to hear. It's kind of things that when you're making the book, you get so kind of deep within it. You're in your own bubble. And so I'm just kind of going at it, and you kind of hope, you know, if and when this book becomes a book, that it does hit those marks, that maybe it does connect with somebody, because that's, in the end, my hope in making it. I mean, obviously, the story kind of reflects different points in my own life in feeling that way, and feeling either that I don't fit, or I'm kind of invisible in my surroundings, and I don't have that. And I kind of think everybody has felt that at one point or another, or still do. And so I didn't want to hesitate in my illustrations to help show that. I knew I wanted to make this kind of more of a dark book. I didn't want to be afraid of making it rainy and kind of not always show Tim, the main character's, face. I wanted him to kind of visually be how he feels. He's very hidden in himself. So you see him kind of with his hood on, of his jacket, and you don't see his face a lot of the book. And I really wanted to try to do what I could visually just to push that feeling, to just help hopefully carry it and make it so he is this little, you know, somewhat bright spot on the page, but he is surrounded by this dark and this rain. And whether or not there might be some bright light of other kids running by and playing because they're all in their own world and having a good time, he still kind of amidst, you know, this kind of rainy weather.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say that this is sort of, you know, this story kind of encapsulates some of the feelings you've had growing up, or maybe even recently. Where then did this story come from? Or even, I know we talked beforehand that you've done animated shorts that I've seen. I love Lil Red. That one's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
But also that you, of course. But also that you have worked in video games. So what drew you to telling stories developed directly for children?
Ever since I was a little kid, I was always kind of telling stories, even picture books. when I was in elementary school, I think I helped my dad try to, he would write words and I would draw pictures with them, or I'd try to write my own. So it was always something that kind of became ingrained in me. So I can't really pinpoint a point in time where I was like, I want to do this. For me, the biggest thing is I love doing storytelling. So whether or not it is in an animated short, whether it's in a comic strip, whether it's in a book, whatever I can do to try to get these ideas or these stories in me out. And picture books are just a great way of doing that. There's something where an animated short is, I love them, but, you know, for just one person doing them like me, it's going to take me 4 or 5 years to do it.
Does it really?
It can take a while.
Oh. And,
yeah, I know. So you really got to like
wow.
that idea. And if you, if you don't like that idea after 2 years, you're going to be very sad. So it's just a lot of work. Where picture books are a bit more manageable, and I like that format, and I like how they can get out, and I love the audience, and I love the stories you can tell for kids. It just really speaks to me. So to actually be able to kind of get my foot in the door, as it were, and get an actual book out there, it's just been amazing.
So when did this one come up? I mean, I know that it's very common for writers when they're approaching writing for children to write several manuscripts, all different kinds of stories until you develop your craft sort of, and then have that book that is sold.
Yeah.
When did it become To the Sea? When did you land on this feeling? 'Cause this is, again, out of the gate, this is quite a personal, story to come out with.
Mm-hmm. I'll try to explain the story and not just make it a giant ramble of words.
I would love a giant ramble of
just
words.
Just ramble out. Okay, so when I did, I think it was probably like about 4 years ago that I got the idea for the book. And at the time, I was trying to work on another manuscript. Because I really wanted to get one of my own picture books out there. And so I was working on this manuscript and it just wasn't going right. The story was getting just big and chunky and strange and overcomplicated and I didn't know what was happening anymore. And it just was taking a life of its own. And I was just getting tired of it. I wasn't excited by that story anymore. And just the kind of slow process of, of developing a pitch, like a picture book dummy, and getting it out there. And when you have a picture book dummy, for anybody who doesn't know, who's listening, it's usually like the sketches for your book, the manuscript is written, and maybe you have a color page. So you have
a
really nice skeleton of a book, but you don't have a finished book, obviously. And so with the book I was currently working on, I had a manuscript and some terrible sketches, and I didn't have anything to show. And for me, I love getting things out there. I just love coming up with ideas, and I want to share them, and I want to put them out. And so I was frustrated at that, and as I was just kind of doodling one night, and sometimes I'll just do some random paintings on my computer just to kind of break up the projects, maybe get inspired, maybe just procrastinate, and usually the latter. I drew a little painting of a little kid top down in a rainy, rainy playground with a giant whale in front of him top down. And I still have the little little painting, and just on a whim and just I don't know where it came from in my brain. But once I did that, it kind of started developing the story in my head of, oh, it would be kind of neat if there's this little kid, and it was this very rainy story, and he seems so alone, and what if he had this connection that nobody else around him had? And I have no idea where the story actually came from this little painting, but it kind of started going in my head, and sorry, a motorbike just went by. Yeah, some kind of a crazy something. And so then I just started writing it, and my intention when I started To the Sea was to just make this book, and whether or not it got published, I didn't care. I just wanted to literally make it from start to finish and then decide after whether I put it online for free, whether I try to self-publish it, which I don't even know how, or what. I didn't know, but I just really wanted to create something without the start and stop, that sometimes trying to work with different people and trying to get it out for publication can create. And so I literally, just went at it with opinions and help from any friends or family just as I was going. But I made a full color book. That was my pitch in what turned out to be in the end to send to a publisher. And I talked to my my children's illustration rep, Nicole, to go. And I sent it to her. And at that time, I still wasn't sure if I even wanted, like, I didn't care. I was like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with this thing, you know. You know, maybe I'll just release it for free. I just want to get something out there.
Okay.
And I send it to her, and I'm like, but, you know, if you have any opinions, I'd love to know, you know, what you think, if it could be better, whatever. And she's like, I think we could probably send this to publishers, like, right now. And I was like, what? No, this is crazy. and I didn't even think about it. And then we worked together a bit and thought of a list of who would we want to try to send this to if we did in fact send it. And Disney Hyperion was way up there at the top, and they showed interest on her email, and it kind of just blew my mind. Just like, I was just like, what is happening? This is insane.
Mickey Mouse wants my book.
Yeah, it's, and coming from, I've worked a lot in different parts of animation and things. So to have, to know that little Disney logo was going to be on my book was also pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a neat connection, yeah.
Yeah, so it was all unexpected as far as it really turning into what it has, but as far as the idea and everything, in some ways I think maybe that's how it became this very quiet story, is because I kind of got in a zone of what I wanted to do, and I just made it and didn't start and stop trying to get opinions. I kind of knew in my head the feel that I wanted it to have. And whether or not little things changed down the way, when I started working with Hyperion, it all bettered it in the end, but I knew I had the, that initial feel that I wanted it.
Well, and that illustration of the top down playground with Tim and Sam ended up in the book, and that's a great opening illustration, or one of the opening illustrations.
The second page in the book is almost literally that same drawing.
Oh, wow. Did you work from text or from illustration? I keep thinking, because of your animation background, if you're just a person that kind of thinks in pictures and words come later, but then I'm reminded that every single person I've talked to has such an incredibly different way of approaching storytelling.
Yeah, totally. It always like changes for me too on each one of the books I've been doing. Sometimes it would be like a manuscript and then taking it from there, and sometimes it'll be jumping in. With this one, I think it was a little bit of both. I really wanted to do some neat different visuals, because the whole book is this crazy contrast of this tiny little kid and this giant whale. And I wanted, like the top-down image, I wanted to do neat things to try to get that across, but in any different ways I could, so it's not just like the same shot over and over again. So there was definitely a lot of, like thumbnail sketching. I'll do a lot of little tiny thumbnails on like cue cards. I'll cut them in half and stuff. Huh. And so there's a lot of that. And then a lot of doing color thumbnails, which are kind of the same thing, but on the computer, where I'll work really small just so I can think about the color and composition and kind of how the flow of each page goes.
Do you do all of your art digitally?
For
this book, was it all done digitally? I should say
All the final art is, for sure.
Yeah.
Whether or not there's like some sketches on paper along the way, like probably.
It has the same, I guess why I'm asking it, is because it has the same textured feel and effect as Little Red, as your animated short, that animated short in particular.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I really wanted to have from the get-go. Like, I wanted it to have, like tooth to it, like grit. Like, it'd feel brush strokes, even though obviously it's not brush strokes, but...
Yeah, but I like that aesthetic, too, of just your character design, of the shapes that... The way that Tim's head is kind of square-ish drawn, and the way that the whale is just this... It seems like you continue to draw the circle larger and larger and larger to make Sam... I like your design a lot.
I appreciate it. I'm always a fan of kind of simple shapes and how you can make them read and not go too crazy and detailed.
Okay, so in the vein of, this is not in the vein, I'm going to be projecting here. I told you this is therapy. I'm going to be projecting. in that feel of perhaps reading too far into the story, but something that I appreciated. And I've actually, again, come to realize that sometimes you make these things and aren't even intentionally doing it. So I might be saying something here and just picking up on some aspect of your subconscious that just happens to be translated into your illustration. But one of the things, again, in that feeling of feeling alone, feeling like someone sees you, that I noticed over and over in your illustration, and I've read the book several times, I almost say several hundred times. Why was I almost going to jump to that?
I like
Not several hundred times, but let's go with it. Just, it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, I feel like I intimately know your book, and I like that feeling of knowing a book like that. And one of the things I noticed, and a feeling that resonates with me, is that when we see Tim, and this is for something that when somebody picks up the book and looks at it, I'd love for you readers to look at it this way, or authors or illustrators, whoever listens, anyone who is reading the book, notice this. Whenever Tim looks at Sam, they smile. They are always smiling. Look at each other. Sam's always smiling. But Tim, our boy, is always smiling, looking at Sam. And whenever he turns away, his smile goes away. And I felt like that sometimes it takes not just, it's very hard, I guess mentally, again, projecting here, but mentally it's very hard to feel like you're not alone, even if there are people in your life that love you and care for you. Unless sometimes they're right in front of you, it's very hard not to feel like you're alone. And that feeling that was communicated over Tim's face, it felt like that to me. And the reason why I bring that up was to make the next point, which is that at some point, without giving away the story, Tim is trying to save Sam and bring him back to the sea. And he does all these sketches of plans, which is like the best kidsiest thing to do. Let's float you on balloons. Let me pull you with my bike. Let's put a rocket on your back. But in one of the drawings we look at close up, the drawing, Tim's drawing of himself, has a huge smile on his face. And when we see the same picture played out in the reality of the book, the smile is gone and there's determination on his face. But it just was that feeling of me of, look, when you're drawing yourself into an illustration, when Tim is drawing himself in this whale, he is happy. He's projecting his own happiness mm-hmm. onto it. And then likewise, you as the artist are projecting it onto there. But it was just an observation, Kale, that I made. That, again, as a person that goes through certain feelings like that, it just felt like, my God, this is a guy, you are a guy who just knows these feelings intimately and are telling it so truthfully. And that, to be that honest, is something that I think will resonate deeply, will connect deeply, will help kids know that these feelings are not individual, solitary feelings. These are universal feelings. Aloneness, loneliness is a feeling that many, many of us experience.
It's, yeah, it's true. I mean, it's definitely things that I hope would kind of read in it. There's little things that I don't think anyone can really pick up on, like the highlights in their eyes. Sam will generally have orange highlights if Tim's there, and Tim will have blue kind of highlights in his eye for
Whoa.
Sam.
Which oh, is I love that.
So,
I see it.
So subtle that I don't know how many people would pick up on that. But it is something I wanted to try to get across, if anything, is that the kind of change of emotion as the story goes on for Tim, almost as a character from the beginning where he is just lost in his hood to a little bit later where now he feels like his hood can come down when he's with Sam. He feels comfortable, like he's getting more and more comfortable. And like you said, in his drawing where he draws himself happy with a happy Sam, one of the things that I'll say is half intentional and half not is I like the contrast that when his plan goes into real life, it shows how sometimes it doesn't work out exactly how you planned. It's not just an easy ride and he can, you know, carry Sam off into the sunset. It doesn't go right away as he hoped. And so you have that secondary hit that might take a little bit more work than you first thought to get that friendship or to be able to to hold on to it, or what you might have to do to be a good friend.
Mm. Well, I love your book, Cale, and I am saying that in no small sense of the word. I love this book, and I'm so glad that it got published, that Disney Hyperion picked it up, that it's on shelves, that we have a beautiful book trailer to go along with it. Oh,
thank you.
You're doing
a lot
of right things. Well, come on. You're the guy behind the book. I just like this. I like the pretty thing. When you make something like you do, it's easy for us to talk about it. Come on. But you brought up, I'm blaming you because you brought it up.
Okay.
You brought up that you're working on other stuff, and I would expect you to be working on other stuff, but is there anything that you're working on that you can share with us that's in the works that maybe you have contracts on, or just anything else going on that you can share?
Yeah. There's a couple things. For this, coming up February, I have a book coming out with, Tundra Books, that Vicky Vansickle wrote, who's a great writer who writes a lot of young adults, and this is her first picture book that I teamed up with her on, and it's called If I Had a Griffin, and it's a really fun book, and I'm really, really excited about it. Doing the illustrations was super fun, and I have a book that I wrote and illustrated that Owl Books out here in Canada is publishing, and it's called Maxwell the Monkey Barber. And it's a pretty fun book, which I'm pretty excited to share. And as well as those, I'm also doing another book for Disney Hyperion, which is really, really exciting. And I don't know how much I can say about that one. I think we have the title, but I'm not sure if it's fully all signed off on. So
okay.
I'll wait to share that. But
great to know that there's different places kind of all around that we can see you, and that it's you're working with other people as well, to see the way that you will create illustration, or that I guess you already have created illustration, but that we will see it for someone else's story and interpreting their story and sort of elevating their story through the way that art and words work together.
It's a lot of fun too, just to be able to like collaborate, so you're not just stuck in your own bubble as well.
Yay for you. Yay more books. Cool. And have you gotten a chance? So you had your big book release in Vancouver. Have you school year's wrapping up? I'm still in school for another 2 weeks.
Okay. But,
so I ask, have you had a chance to visit any schools yet to share to the sea with any classes?
No, I haven't necessarily. The one experience I had was neat on its own, was when I was in Vancouver, I went down to my mom's school because she teaches kindergarten and grade one.
No fun.
And she was my only kind of test when I was doing the book. She brought in the F&Gs and she read them to her class, and she even filmed her class with her iPad as she was reading it, so I could see what the reaction was.
I've done that to people before. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so stressful. You're watching these kids' reactions, and you're like, why'd that kid look away? What's that kid even doing? Do they even care? But it was really cool. It was really special, and I could see some of the kids actually connecting. And at one point in the book, the two characters pinky swear, and as she was reading it, one of the kids in the background kind of pinky sweared with themselves.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
It's a feeling thing. When you pinky swear, you're locked. I can feel it now because you're bringing up the word. It's like when you talk about yawning and it makes you yawn.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
feel the pinky swear thing. And I've got a little boy at home that likes to pinky swear with me, and it's adorable to
learn
to do that.
Pinky swears are the best. So I went in there, and I gave them some to the sea buttons that I had made as well, because I kind of wanted to thank them for being part of the book. And then, and I taught them how to draw Sam the whale, which is pretty fun as well. They all did great jobs. They drew just as good as me, so I gotta up my game.
And you also got to hear, and it was your mom too, so that's even cooler that you got to share that experience with her, but you got to hear someone else read your book, which I think is a neat thing, because when you write, I don't think you always know the way that someone else will. I said this on the podcast before, but the way someone else will perform your book.
That's very true. I think as you write more, and it's things I've heard from writer friends, is just it puts it in your brain more and more to read your books out loud as you're writing them, or read them to somebody, and just it kind of changes everything on how you're going to word things, and
yeah
it's definitely important.
My favorite wording in your book, I have it marked. I wrote it down. I've copied it in places before too. I just love, other than the phrase that's repeated, "I see you," which I love that. I love, though, that you've got a phrase here when Tim is trying to put his plan into action with Sam. And it says, there's a moment when there's some doubt there. We don't know if Tim's going to be able to do it. And it says, he should not, he could not, he would not let his friend down. And I felt every time I read it, Gail, there's no way for me to read it other than punctuating every word. And I just think that's a testament to the power of language. So I like that phrase is in there. And it's a reading aloud kind of thing that works out over time. And I like that it's there.
I'm glad it spoke to you. It was, again, it's my first written book. So there was a lot of doubt in me in the end if I, you know, did it right. And I just kind of went with my gut and then got help along the way. But yeah, I'm so happy to hear that. That any of the lines, you know, spoke and connected with you or anybody else.
Yeah, well, I'm thankful for it. I hear my kids in the background getting ready for bedtime, and I look at my time and I realize that I've used a fair amount of your time too. So why don't I, for sake of not keeping any longer, ask you one final question, and that is, I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I'd love to know what one person you'd want on your team, Kale, alive or past, from the kid-lit world, and why.
Ooh, the big question.
The big question.
I've been thinking about this. I've been writing up charts. I've been putting that like red string on photos and books. And I have a kickball in the room, and I'm
like, that
weighing it. Yeah.
Holding it, yeah. The weight of it, yeah. In your hand.
Like, the wind, and I'm like measuring, okay, the wind's blowing southeast, so. Well, part of me was like, well, maybe I'll pick Dr. Seuss, even though it's a little like, you know, everybody would probably pick Dr. Seuss. But then I was like, well, I don't know, maybe he'll start saying weird rhymes, and I won't know what he's doing, and he'll pass at strange times, and he'll try to feed me, like green eggs or something, and it'll be kind of awkward, so I won't go with him. And I was thinking, I really like Allison Martin Provinson from way back. Their illustrations are always gorgeous, and I was like, maybe I'll choose them because they really influenced my illustrations. But there's two of them, so that's kind of awkward, and maybe I'd have to choose one, and then they would fight, and then I wouldn't be able to play kickball because of that. So I won't choose them, but
so diplomatic.
I gotta think these things through. It could just, you know, turn into a mess of a situation. So I think I'm gonna choose somebody who's actually living, because it could also be awkward playing with somebody who's passed away. But it'd be a little Weekend at Bernie's.
No doubt.
So I think I'm gonna go with Scott C, who recently put out The Hug Machine.
Yes, I love Scott. Scott Campbell's amazing.
And I feel like if I'm playing kickball with somebody, he's just going to be a great time. Maybe we'll go get pizza after and just, you know, have fun. He seems like somebody who'd just be up for having fun, not getting too competitive. So, yeah.
Oh, my word. I have to tell him that you picked him because he's the greatest. And if I tell him, I will see him at SPX. It's the Small Press Expo in DC, I'm sure he'll be there. He's there every year. But if I tell him, it will mean that I get a bonus hug from Scott C, which I will have to virtually pass along to you. But that guy, he is a great guy to have around at all times, let alone on a kickball game. He would be the one that I would feel like there's no way that it would feel competitive with him by you. Like, you just wouldn't – it can't be a competition.
Yeah,
it's just all, like, good time.
Yeah, just a good time. Just it felt like – yeah, that felt like the good choice.
Yeah, that was a good one, Kale. Hey, thanks so much again for coming on, and congratulations about your debut. It's a book that I love, and more so I love sharing it with other people. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate all the support and inviting me on the podcast.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep and I'll see you there.